This is the recording of September 27, 2017, regular Board of Directors meeting to convene at 4:30 p.m. at the boardroom of Chugach Electric Association at 5601 Electron Drive, Anchorage, Alaska.
4:31. Let me stand for the pledge.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yeah. Okay. So, present we have Director Parks, Director Henderson, Director Crawford, Director Reeves, and on the phone we have Director Reiser and myself. And with that, I think we have a safety minute.
Taylor Crocker, your safety specialist.
Hi, Taylor.
So our monthly safety topic is chemical safety. And what I wanted to talk about this month for chemical safety is something that we talk about at work all the time, but not so much at home, and that's safety data sheets. So for every chemical that's manufactured, it comes with a safety data sheet, which is basically all the information you'd want to know about that chemical. So at work, we have called SDS Pro. It's a database where we can bring up all the chemical safety data sheets that we have in Chugach Electric. And then we want employees to review those before they work with the chemical. Well, just for an example, I brought in the safety data sheet for Clorox Lavender Bleach and wanted to just go over the 16 different sections on the safety data sheet. But when I was reviewing this in my office, because I don't normally work with Clorox Lavender Bleach, I realized it's kind of a dangerous chemical that most people have in their house. So the classification under the hazard identification on the safety data sheet, this chemical is considered hazardous by the 2012 OSHA Hazard Communication Standard. So in our company, we had this, let's say, over at Beluga to clean the rooms with. This would be a hazardous chemical. And then it has a section for the composition information on ingredients, but a very important one is the section on first aid measures. So the general advice is show the safety data sheet to the doctor in attendance. So one of the first things the paramedics ask when they get to the scene is, hey, do you have the safety data sheet for the chemical that this person was just exposed to? So it doesn't always happen, of course. I mean, I think we've all been at work working with chemicals and stuff, but it's great when people have these printed out ahead of time in case something happens. But then it goes over like rinsing your eyes for 15 minutes, which is most chemicals, and then taking off the contaminated clothing and other stuff like that. And then for firefighting measures, it's not really flammable. I guess we could have guessed that. Then it goes down to accidental release measures, and basically, it's the same, avoid contact with skin, and then there's a section on handling and storage. But then the exposure controls and personal protection section, number 8, is where it really gets good. So if splashes are likely to occur, wear safety glasses with side shields or goggles. But then it states that nothing is required for consumer use. So at work, we need to use safety glasses, goggles, and gloves and stuff, but if you're using this at home, whatever you want to do is fine. And then the skin and body protection says, you know, wear rubber and neoprene gloves unless you're at home. Then we get into the physical and chemical properties. So if you were a chemical engineer and wanted to know exactly what this chemical will do, that's your section. And then the stability and reactivity, it's a stable product. And then it has the toxicological information section. So for inhalation, exposure to vapor or mist may irritate your respiratory tract. So has anyone mixed ammonia and bleach before by accident at their house?
Gas.
Yes. Yeah. And it actually is something that happens quite often. And when I was a fireman, I went to 3 calls where that exact thing happened, where someone was cleaning their house and mixed the bleach in Windex and actually burned up their lungs from it. And eye contact may cause eye irritation. Skin contact, the prolonged contact may cause irritation. And then if you ingest it, they want you to call the poison control hotline at 1-800-222-1222. Then there's a section on the ecological information. So, of course, it's not good for aquatic life. And there's a disposal consideration section if you're going to be getting rid of a large quantity, transportation information, regulatory information, and then the last column is other information. So that's what a safety data sheet's made up with. And you can find these easily if you Google pretty much any chemical that's in your house or at work. You'll find the safety data sheet on the website for the supplier. So just because you guys are at home doesn't mean I don't want you to be safe. So this month I got everyone chemical safety splash goggles. So if you're mixing up your cleaning chemicals and stuff, getting ready to clean your house.
Ammonia.
And I found some that are good for people that have glasses even, so they'll fit over the normal prescription glasses. So does anyone have any questions on safety data sheets or anything else chemical related? Thank you.
Thank you.
And no, cannot mix ammonia with goggles on it. The vapors that screw you up.
It's not going to save your lungs.
Oh, come on.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And I really like the graphic. Most MSDS don't really come with that kind of illustration. That's a good one. Okay, so we have a very lengthy agenda for the evening. We will try to move through as efficiently as possible. With that, you guys have all looked at the agenda, and do I have a motion for approval of the agenda?
I move to approve the year that was written.
Second.
Any discussion on that? Janet, did you have anything? We had talked about removal of.
Yes, I'm sorry, Bettina. I was finding the undo. Now that I know where it is. Yes, Madam Chair, I move that we remove, or I don't think I have to move, but it's in the discussion. Would somebody accept a friendly amendment to remove the vote on the salary ranges and postpone that till October, the October board meeting?
So that is.
I've talked with both Bettina and Lee about that, and we think that as we continue work on the balancing of the salary and the benefits, and that we want to take them up both at the same time, so I'd like to move that to October.
So that is 10B, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. We accept that friendly amendment. We do. Mary, were you the second?
Yeah, I'm the second. I just wondered what was the. I mean, there was pretty much widespread agreement about the salary ranges.
I guess, Janet, do you want to expound on that?
Certainly, a lot of people have expressed an interest in working both of the issues. I mean, we had a robust discussion, as they say, last night on the issue of benefits and how to manage those and how to balance those against, wages. And so it's part of a larger discussion. And I think, and others have expressed to me, that would be better taken as a whole and postponed 1 month while we continue to work the other side of the equation.
Accept that?
Yeah.
Any other discussion on agenda items or any other changes to the agenda? All right. Shall we vote those in favor of approval of the agenda as amended? Say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposition? Hearing none, The agenda has been approved. Next we go to persons to be heard. I don't believe we have any persons to be heard here tonight. The consent agenda, I think all of that is pretty self-explanatory. The training, just to highlight, there is a training opportunity in Nashville in December. That deadline is coming up. I'll let Connie know if you're going to go to training. Other than that, do we have a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on the consent agenda? All those in favor of approval of that agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? All right, the consent agenda is approved. And we will move on to CEO reports and correspondence. So, Lee, is there some...
I think, unless there are questions from the board, I would like to go through item C and item D.
Okay.
And I guess, Shelley, or you want to go through the presentation on the LED?
Did anyone have any questions on any of the financial statements or reports or the railroad comparison or comments?
Well, I just had a question about MLMP. Was that just a coincidence that they happened to, they scraped drop?
Yeah, the fuel surcharge is where the drop came, and they had an over-recovery in the prior quarter, so they're giving basically to make it up in the next quarter, so it dropped down, and they did their internal cost of gas from BRU, and it came in lower, so I think you'll see them have a lower fuel costs than what they had before.
Okay.
And they also had some, actually a number of economy energy sales to Fairbanks that was credited back towards their fuel. So it was a combination of an over recovery and probably the additional economy sales that lowered
so
their
that
cost.
Little blip when their costs were high and in the newspaper, that was probably just caused for the cost by the cost.
It was the cost of fuel. If you remember, they brought on their plant 2A late, so they used a lot of fuel that they didn't anticipate early on, so they were recovering those costs, which made their fuel prices spike. Now they're going to be down. They'll probably stay at a lower level.
Yeah, I was actually glad to see that.
So you'll probably see them be underneath us on the retail or the residential side. We're still quite a bit lower on the small commercial and large commercial customers.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Shelley.
So do I have
about LED upgrade?
Yes, we have an LED project, and I'm the project manager for the LED project. I'm not sure if I know everybody. Shelley Schmidt. I'm the senior manager of distribution engineering here at Chugach. And this LED project is part of the sustainability at Chugach. Why is the industry moving to LEDs? They're more efficient, they have a longer lifespan, they put out less light pollution, and they're controllable, which is very important. My new word today, efficacy. That's the measurement of how well a light source produces visible light. So luminous efficacy. We see it on the top chart here, where LEDs is a newer technology, and starting in about 1960s, but into the 1980s and early 2000s, you see that technology curve just rise extremely fast. And about 10 years ago, the LED curve went higher than the high-pressure sodium. So at that point, it became a viable alternative to high-pressure sodium with street lighting. The chart at the bottom shows a 150-watt HPS fixture, which is the smaller typical ones you'd see in a residential neighborhood, uses 195 watts. We're able to replace that with an LED fixture, same amount of light, same distribution, with only 54 watts. That's 27%. The other LED fixture we're using is the 250-watt HPS equivalent, It uses 108 watts, which is only 35% of its HPS equivalent. So in less than half the light, the power usage on these LEDs. They have a longer lifespan. The current HPS bulbs last about 24,000 hours. If we burn these lights 12 hours a day, it lasts about 5.5 years. The LEDs, they're guaranteed for 50,000 hours. That's 10 years. If it fails before that time, the manufacturers are replacing it. And we should actually see quite a bit more than that. I've seen statistics up to 100,000 hours. Our cool climate really does help with the LED technology. Less light pollution. With the Dark Skies Initiative, we're trying to reduce the light pollution as much as possible. So we've picked fixtures that have the lights recessed into the fixture. They all face downward, and they have a back shield. So they call this the bug rating is how you classify light pollution. So bug being backlight, uplight, and glare. We're addressing all three of those issues. And this is a great picture that MLMP took during their project. They're currently also changing over to LEDs, and this was taken in February. The light on the left, you see light output, you know, off the road, you see a lot of light into people's front yards. Whereas the new LED is on the right, it's restricted strictly to the street, and you don't see the glare of the light fixture itself, which was the HPS bulb that protruded from the bottom of the fixture. These are also controllable. The industry likes this because you put a control node on here, you can do constant light output. It can modify the amount of power that goes into the fixture to always give the same amount of output, even if it's brand new or very old. You can dim these lights. Low pedestrian areas, the middle of the night, some utilities or communities are dimming or even turning off lights during certain times. Trail lighting, for example, in parks when gates are closed. These can be flashed or strobed if there was an emergency for first responders to see this area quickly, or a natural gas leak. You can flash all of the lights in a particular area. We also have remote on and off and outage notification because these lights are always talking back to Chugach or the utility. So we don't have to rely on a customer calling in saying my street light's out, talking to a person, or leaving a long message. This is similar to our AMI program, similar mesh network controls the lights. And then localized metering. You can actually meter on how much usage the light is using as opposed to estimating 11 and a half or 12 hours a day. Chugach has additional benefits to moving to LEDs, primarily material management. Before, we had to keep three or four different types of bulbs, different sizes, different fixtures, drivers, ballasts, photocells. We've reduced that to two different fixtures with one long-lasting photocell. And a huge issue, maintenance costs. We have over 1,000 maintenance calls that we make to streetlights a year, streetlights being out. After the program is completed, that number should be a fraction of that 1,000. And the cost of LEDs has gone down significantly. When we first bought an LED streetlight, it was nearly $800. The quote I got last week is $150, and that's cheaper than the HPS fixtures that we were buying. So it's very economical at this point in time to move to these programs. Now the Chugach LED program, we started in 2011 with the community of Bayshore. This was in conjunction with a legislative grant. We changed out 65 lights. 2 years later, working with the Community Council of Ocean View as a public safety project they had, we changed 113 lights. And that was a joint venture in cost between the Muni, another legislative grant, and Chugach. And so here, 2 years later, 2015, we went to a system-wide program. We wanted to replace the additional 4,800-plus fixtures. There are approximately 5,000 lights on the Chugach system that Chugach owns and maintains, and those are directly connected to our system. They don't go through meters. So the scope was to replace the remaining HPS fixtures with LEDs. And we started by not buying any more HPS bulbs. We said, we're not even going to buy them anymore. We bought the two LED fixtures we needed. And the next calls that the crews made to go
respond to a light being out, they would take off the old HPS fixture and put on a new LED fixture, and they've been continuing with that effort. We're also being proactive, changing out poles and poles that are leaning. We're doing those on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood basis with certain job orders and construction crews, because it does take a little bit of equipment. We can see they're changing the pole out. You have to have bigger trucks and larger equipment. So the 257 poles that we're proactively replacing are old wooden poles wrapped in fiberglass, and the fiberglass is peeling. And the light's actually on the top of the pole. It doesn't extend over the street like we needed to with the mast arms. So those are all being changed out with new metal poles and mast arms and then the corporate fixtures. So the project status. This is a picture of the Anchorage Bowl. Out of 5,000 lights, we've completed, as of last month, 1,475. We've changed out 172 poles out of the 257. So we're at 30% done with the lights, 70% done with the poles, and they've told me they will be wrapping up the poles within the next month, month and a half. So the pole changeouts will be complete. We will continue with the fixture changeouts through the end of 2019. Now, some more statistics. Out of these 5,000 lights that are directly connected to the Chugach system, there's 4,442 that are paid for by the Muni. Those are lighting Muni roads. The state has 36 lights. There's homeowners associations and trailer parks, but also may have lights that aren't being paid for by the Muni. There's about 170 of those. The other 330 lights are area lights, and residential customers, small businesses, and churches, they pay for area lighting, similar to the Muni pays for a street light, and it might light a yard or a parking lot area. The municipality, and you see that at the top, Municipal Light and Power, has their service territory. They're currently doing their project, and they have 4,000 lights directly connected to their system. So between Chugach and MLMP, that's about 9,000 lights connected to the utilities. MOA, Road and Maintenance, also has an additional 13,300 lights throughout the Muni that are fed off of metered load centers. And those are different than what we're seeing here. So that's kind of a summary of the project and the status where we're currently at. Are there any questions?
I'm just curious. On the photo that you have, what's the yellow? Is that not ours?
The yellows? No, these are all the 5,000 lights in the Chugach system. The green, it's hard to see, shows that those have changed over to LEDs. The yellow, they're still HPS.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the blue areas, those are the areas where the poles are being changed out. And we're doing all the lights in those areas at the same time.
Okay.
I think Janet has a comment. Janet?
Yes, I do. Hi, Sharon. Thank you for that. That was a good presentation. My question is, we've incurred additional costs to put up these new lights, some additional costs, although I think you've managed it really well, to the benefit of the consumer. How do we share in the savings at any time, or do we share in any way and recover our costs of replacing these lights, or is it just the benefit to the consumer who's paying less for the power, or they're using less power?
It is definitely a benefit to the Muni, but we are saving significant dollars in maintenance. Now that the costs are lower, our maintenance costs, that's what we're primarily considering our benefit.
So did we adjust the tariff to take into consideration our lower maintenance but higher initial costs, or how was that handled?
The tariff was revised several years ago when we started the project back in 2011. And so the LED costs are slight. They were modified per the cost at that time. We will be evaluating this situation over the next 2 years, and when the next tariff revision goes through, we will probably make some changes given the next 2 years' worth of data.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Where's Girdwood? Where's
Girdwood? Girdwood? I don't have the Girdwood lights on this map, but if we have lights directly connected to our system, we will be changing those as well. That's a great question.
Well,
At Hope.
City of Whittier has 25 lights that I'm not showing here. Kenai Peninsula schools have a few. So there are a few areas outside of the Anchorage Bowl where we do have lights, and they will all be changed as well.
Our whole contingency here.
Okay, good. Very important.
So we had a lot of discussion on my cul-de-sac when we got our new LED light. It's not as bright as it was before. It doesn't shine back into the yard. Like you said, it goes right out into the cul-de-sac. And at first they said, well, something's wrong with the light. It's too dim. But as it's gotten darker, I've had several people say, well, it's okay. It's all right.
Okay.
And when I told them, it's going to mean lower bills for the municipality and all, that was good. So now I think that they're fine with it.
Good. We are just the concerns that are coming in, you know, on a case-by-case basis. We'll look at them. But we really have not had hardly any issues to address.
It was just when it started getting darker and we noticed the light was different.
Yeah.
And it's not pointed into the yards. Before, it lit up the yards. Mm-hmm. Now it doesn't light up the yards. It's just the cul-de-sac. So.
Excellent. That was the intent. All right.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
Next. Right, I think Tyler,
Tyler, do you want to talk a little bit about our member appreciation? Member Appreciation Day, because I don't like to steal the thunder from my employees, but I will invite all the board members to come to a Member Appreciation Day, drop by, have something to eat, talk to the people. I think it's a really important event. This is our fourth one. And it's been a successful event every year, and I won't jinx the weather by talking about it. Anyway, so with that, I'll turn it over to Kate to talk about the events and answer any questions you have.
Yeah, so just to add to that, thank you. The last few years, we've had it throughout the entire week, and this year we have jammed all that fun into one day, and that day is next Friday, October 6th. And the majority of our activities will be held underneath a tent. And we have external exhibitors coming, so Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, RuralCap, Renewable Energy Alaska Project, the state as well. They'll bring some of their emergency preparedness information. And then, of course, we'll also have two guest staff on hand to answer questions. There's going to be presentations throughout the entire event. We have a little stage set up, and people will be able to speak to certain things. And on the document that you have, hopefully in front of you, it lists the agenda of the presentation, including some of our Chugach staff as well with tree clearing and underground. That's all inside of the tent, as well as the barbecue, hot dogs, all that fun stuff. Outside of the tent, we are going to have two bucket trucks. And so we hope to have some kiddos as well as adults ride in the bucket trucks and even go quite high. We also have an energy bike similar to the annual meeting, if you remember that. You can hop on that and power a few light bulbs. We also will have an electric vehicle on site, and so our members could get behind the wheel and test drive an electric vehicle. So we have a lot of activities going on, and we hope to see you all, as well as, of course, lots of our members participating. Okay. Here.
What is that electric vehicle? Where did it come from?
Yeah, so it is a Bolt, and Alaska Sales and Service have one in stock, and they are going to bring it and allow members to test drive it if they like.
You said a Bolt, not a Bolt.
That's correct.
A B with a B. Or
that's
Bolt
right.
With a
B.
All electric.
Yes, all electric. That's right.
When are we getting ours?
Before the end of the year.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Yeah,
thank you.
Drive it up. We're going to deliver it. So we'd love to see you next Friday. I think it's a great event, a lot of success. We're also big SBP tours. Kids love the bucket truck drives. The guys like giving the bucket truck drives. We have harnesses that will fit the smallest child. Maybe not infant, but.
Coffee lady, don't forget.
There's just too many things that we're offering. So you can have a hot dog and have some lunch and then get on the bike and work it off.
That's right.
And the tours, I do have to say, they are a very popular event. We've already booked out all of our tours and we have a substantial wait list already for members wanting to really look at our power plant. I just spoke with another member yesterday that was just very excited, so they really appreciate this.
That's great.
Thank you.
Righty.
So, with that, I think we move on to director reports. First one up is ArcTech. Janet, do you have anything? Or Harry, right? You go to those meetings, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have a report there, Janet, for us on ArcTech and the latest and greatest?
Okay, I think Lee has a little bit of an update from the RCA meeting this morning. One of the things, and stop me if we've already reported on this, is that the last meeting that we had, we decided to put out an RFP to individuals and organizations to to work with all the rail belt utilities, including the non-RTEC members, to come up with a consensus on some pertinent things about the RRC, including governance. So my understanding was that our RFP was supposed to have gone out in early September, I believe. Lee, did it go out today? Are you aware?
It was scheduled to go out today. That's the last list I had was supposed to be by the end of today.
So presuming that happened or not presuming that happened, the next step is then to get responses from individuals and others, and it's basically a facilitation, an RFP for facilitation services for trying to develop consensus around RRC issues. And then a provider will be enjoined and presumably do the work, and then one of the goals is to have something together back to RTEC for the legislative session or shortly thereafter. Did I miss anything, Lee?
No, I think you covered it well. At the commission public meeting today, Reed gave a presentation, and they did mention that ArcTech was putting out the RFP, so I think we'll get some good press with the commission on it. And along with the presentation from the utilities, I think the commission was very pleased with the activities that the utilities are working together. The power pool was the theme this week. And then on the first public meeting in October, they'll be talking about the reliability standards and cybersecurity standards. So that's coming up for next month.
And I correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe there is a one-month period for folks to do for response to
yes.
Leaving the meeting.
Janet?
Uh-oh. You pressed the wrong button. A little disconnect there.
Is a task that the new person will do the same as what I understood it to be earlier, that the person is going to try to help ArcTech figure out what on earth it should be when it grows up?
The scope of the consultant will be to help pull together the Unified System Operator, the RCC, effort, and working with the utilities and the other stakeholders to come up with basically what is the RRC or and what are the primary functions, and then what would the board structure look like. So it's someone to come in and help facilitate discussions between the utilities and the stakeholders to come up with what works for everybody.
What would ArcTech be
in
all that?
ArcTech's mission in this regard was only to facilitate to get this
just
started.
Facilitate the discussion.
Right.
Gotcha.
Because we didn't feel there was a leader in the rail belt to push this, so we felt ArcTech was a good avenue for the four utilities to get this avenue moving forward.
Okay. Janet, do you have anything else to add?
No, I don't believe so, except I must have very fat fingers because I hung up, I FaceTimed you guys, and it all went to hell, so I think I'm back. No, I missed a little bit of it, but I don't think anything new is happening up with ArcTech until we have the RRC contractor in place.
the proposals must be received by October 19th, is the schedule.
Oh, so 3 weeks, okay. Yeah.
So it did go out today.
Sorry, but it should have gone out today.
All right, any other questions on that?
All right, board committee reports, audit and finance. I don't know if we haven't had another meeting since our last board meeting. As you all know, we had a good discussion in the operations committee last night. And lots to talk about. Governance.
Well, we haven't met. There are some questions that have come up from time to time about potential changes to the bylaws or some initiatives for the bylaws. And I think I should schedule a meeting. Wow. I should schedule a meeting probably fairly soon in the new year, because we'll want to take some proposals to the bylaws committee, but really not, not right now. But I would just urge people to be thinking. In the past, we have talked about whether we want to change our term limits or make some changes in the materials that people submit if they want to run for the board, because there have been some questions about whether we ought to review those materials at least in some aspects before we repeat that in the booklets. So there were some also some issues that had come up in a training class, I think, that Janet went to, and we had a lawyer look at some of those questions, but the advice that we got back from management was that these really aren't problems that apply to us, but I think we should at least get a little bit more than that before we decide that we don't need to make any changes. Long-winded way to say that we should have a meeting.
Okay.
And if people have thoughts about things I should be cogitating on, send me a note.
All right. Are there any other meetings that people attend?
Yeah, I can give a very brief update on the REAP meeting that occurred last Friday, the 22nd. There were no actions out of that meeting. It's more of a general update on two different things. There's a little discussion on Green Bank and whether Anchorage Green Bank or Alaska Green Bank and some of the funding. Chris Rose gave the overview on it. Basically, identified that this is something that has started in Canada. Ontario, I believe, is the first city with Green Bank in Canada. And he felt from REAP's standpoint, from an Alaska, if something like this moved forward in Alaska, the first focus should be on energy efficiency projects. So that kind of an idea. The second half of the meeting, there's a short update on system operator, and the main question in there was they were trying to understand, had the RFP gone out yet, and that was just answered. And one comment I did hear in the meeting, and it was from Homer's standpoint, that they thought there was much more alignment in the last architect meeting on the manager's level at that meeting. So there was some positive feedback in that sense.
Okay. Questions? I think, Janet, you have a comment?
You gotta find your mute button.
That's gotta unmute. Yeah.
Janet?
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I do have a meeting to report when it's time. Is it time?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so I went to NHA conference. It was interesting in a lot of different ways, but I think one of the takeaways for me to report back to you all is the lunch meeting on, Thursday, and it was Brad Michaeljohn from Conservation Fund. He gave a probably an hour-long presentation over the lunch period about the removal of the Lower Kootenai Dam first of all, was fascinating from a deconstruction and engineering standpoint. Fascinating. There are a couple of things that probably we would be better deferring some of this to executive session. There was certainly some effort. I did ask a question there, and I asked, did they see the rehabilitation, if you want to use that term, of the river and renewable energy from that, including the lake, as mutually compatible? And he said that they hoped so, but he wasn't sure. That was sort of up to the utilities to figure out the rest of that. So there were some other kinds of things that I think that we should be aware of, but I would prefer to report on those in executive session.
Add that there, then. Any questions, comments? Any other reports for other meetings? Okay. All right. So we will move on to some unfinished business that we had, and it was moved to this month's meeting. It was the NRECA resolution discussion. I'm going to let Susan take over on that.
Well, we all received a report from Phil in August on the NRECA resolutions, and I can't help but jump into that because I have testified at two different NRECA meetings about the resolutions, and it has been actually rewarding to have people in some other utilities, you know, come up to us and talk to us about the affinity that they feel with the comments that we've made. I guess, generally speaking, you know, Phil, many of these resolutions are pretty boring, and they say, you know, rah, rah for the first responders, and that's really important, and they're not controversial in any way, and I certainly agree with Phil in great respect, and I appreciate his effort to review the resolutions, but I cannot accept the Clean Air Resolution Number 3 and Resolution Number 4. And I don't want to belabor the commentary that NRECA puts in with these resolutions. And in fact, the commentary to the policy background document is really not supposed to be discussed at the meetings, but these people have their head in the sand. And basically the clean air policy says we have to protect the interest of co-ops. The greenhouse gas one says we need to make sure that anything that's done to address emissions is the most cost-effective solution. You know, this is really a focus on utility and cost, and they're pro-coal, and what, in some respect, they're pro-nuclear. And we have a message that we could say, that we could share at the national meeting. And what I would urge us to do is to say that we reached out to our members, and we asked our members, well, first of all, we passed a sustainability resolution, and then we reached out to our members, and our members told us 80% of them care about balancing finances, social and environmental consequences of action, and 57% of them would pay for renewable energy, would pay more. And 63% would support a community solar project, and 60% would pay more for their power to have something like that happen. So as far as we're concerned, based on what we've heard from our members, there is anxiety about climate change. There's anxiety about being respectful of the environmental consequences of your operations. And, you know, we think it's inappropriate for a national organization to simply pretend that the only thing that we need to care about is avoiding any kind of an impact from from government regulation of utilities. And, you know, you're not we're not going to change this. We're not going to turn this tanker into any other direction. But we have the opportunity to, when we speak, we're reaching out to the 10% or 15% of the people in the audience who just want somebody to stand up there and say that. So, you know, that's what I would like to see us do. On the clean air emission, the clean air one, we could even offer that we don't object to the language, but we think it's important to protect co-ops and their members. You know, we're not just protecting the economic security of the co-op, because we're not doing that if everybody's underwater. So I think we could fix that one with just one change, but the greenhouse gas one is just simply out of touch with where the United States is. I mean, for example, it says things like there shouldn't be any efforts, any consequences, any cost absorbed by power companies in the United States unless and until there's an equal burden put on power companies in undeveloped countries. And that's, you know, that's something that we were hearing 30 years ago. I don't think I think that organization loses credibility when it is so strident, particularly in this year when we've seen consequences of that some people believe are partly the result of climate change. So anyway, that's what I think we should say something, and I think it should focus on those two resolutions, 3 and 4.
So your suggestion is just saying our piece and not voting any different way than
I think we should vote no on 4, and that's the only change I would make from Phil's recommendation. Okay, Jim, you?
Yeah, I had a couple questions, and I agree with Susan. I think the point for the argument is we get no acceptance, and I would go a different direction. But I had a little difficulty. I didn't understand the difference between clean power and carbon reduction. If somebody wants to clarify that, I'm grateful. But if there's no difference, so be it.
Well, the clean power plan was the Obama initiative that was being done by EPA to impose new regulations on power plants. So it was the implementation
of
carbon reduction, carbon emission reduction. So they're saying just take out all references to it because it's no longer an initiative, or I think it's no longer an initiative.
So they're taking both of those statements out of there. Is that what they're saying here? Because I'm looking at the 23rd.
Which one are you looking at?
I'm looking at 4. I'm actually looking at about, 4. I'm looking at number 4. At least that's where my note seems to be.
Yeah, they took out the clean power plan reference, and they just they're talking about it generically as carbon mitigation proposals, which I guess there aren't any right now. They also, in the other one, wanted to support the taking away of any power of EPA to make change. In other words, it can only be Congress who can act, and I don't agree with that. But again, you can't get into the weeds in this unless the other thing I'd say is that the Resolutions Committee met in Virginia, and then it met in California. Now it's meeting in our region, and as you and I know, because we've done this before, by the time you're at the national meeting, nobody's really listening to you.
Correct.
So
I mean, if they did, and I think they shouted us down.
Well,
or they shouted us down.
The first time I did it, there was absolutely no. First time I commented, testified, there was, a bunch of people came up and asked me who I was because I think they thought, we got to get this nut out of here. The second time I testified, though, several people came up and introduced themselves and said, we agree with you, and we're from some little co-op in Oregon, or we're from some little co-op in New Hampshire, and we're really glad to see that there are others who feel the way we do. So there was some synergy by the time we did it the second time. it's true that we're not changing the language of the resolution, but I still think it's important to testify.
I think we're changing attitudes.
So, Madam Chair?
Go ahead. Janet, I see that you have a question.
Well, I thought that I would go ahead and make the motion just so that we could, you know, vote on this or finish this. So I'm going to go ahead and move that the Board of Directors accept the NRECA resolution, NRECA 2017 proposed resolution, with the exception of number 4, and that we vote no on number 4.
Second.
So, discussion on the motion?
I don't think you're covering enough of the topics. I'll vote no.
You have comments on the others?
Others, yes.
This is the time to talk to them.
That's why I you know, no, I won't. That's inadequate.
So let's go forward with the discussion.
Well, first of all, I need to understand the difference between clean power and carbon reduction and why we don't leave clean power in there, first of all. I need that. Second of all, the argument isn't that we need clean power. That their argument is it's cost ineffective. Or their issue here is we want the cheap. We want the cheapest power. What do you want? Cheapest power today or the cheapest power over the next 30 years? And that's the issue. If you want to talk finances, and that's the point that they seem to focus on is the cost issue, you have to look at it long term. And like you said, we don't. It won't make any difference. We're all swimming. That's 30 years from now. And the cost will be significantly higher if we're all swimming. Okay? So they missed. The point is, if their issue here is cost, they're a bunch of cheap bastards. So I suggest that you argue the cost side of it. And granted, you have to forecast. And there's all the booger factors involved with forecasting. But that's the issue.
I think it's trying to bring out what the real cost of doing nothing is. I mean, it you know, coal may be a penny or two cheaper today, but what's it going to cost us down the road to continue the same path we're on?
And it isn't cheaper. You know, be brief. When now, if North 48 is cheaper, when they're giving it away, when they're giving you a penny per kilowatt to take it.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all, Jim. I think that you know, the whole premise behind it is changing, and renewable energy is getting much cheaper and gaining more acceptance every day, and we see a real difference from when we first. Brought it up at in RECA, as opposed to what it is today, and I think we just need to keep the pressure on and keep them moving towards more renewables and you know a better foresight.
Cece, and then Susan.
So I don't disagree with you guys. My comment is kind of an overall level in this particular resolution. I think it's good to speak up to the ones we disagree with, because my experience with NRECA meetings is they normally would rather vote them as a block, and they've gotten very comfortable, and there's no discussion on the resolution. There's this huge room that's full of people. Someone moves to vote them as a block, and what's the point if we don't at least talk about them? So I agree that we should speak to what... along with Janet's motion was, but we should have a say on the everything we have a different opinion on.
Agreed. Susan?
Yeah, I'm just and wait, if I might,
Susan,
you know, how those things go down. If I might, if how those things go down if we get to vote up or down, I agree with the bigger conversation, and I agree that, and Susan's point of it engendered when we vote our the way we feel, yes or no, we don't have. There's, like you said, not a lot of discussion. That does engender conversation and connections, and that's the real value. Our only leverage here is to vote yes or no. It is not an open forum for conversation. That's why I made the motion to vote yes and then no, because that's all we get to do. but I absolutely agree that the bigger conversation is important and needs to happen.
Yeah, I was just going to respond to the comment on money, because when somebody says we have to look at the cost, what they're really saying is I don't want to be bothered with that. They're dismissive of the concept itself. So when they say we have to do the most cost-effective thing, they're not really talking about cost. They're saying, I don't want to talk about that. I'm not even going to consider that because it's cost. So I totally agree that new projects, wind projects, dam projects, you know, ultimately in the long run, they produce the cheapest power. I lived in Washington State, so we have 4-cent power thanks to all those dams. But that's a different question than I think what they're addressing here. They're saying, we don't make me change anything about my power plant. Don't make me do new source performance standard review. Don't make me put on any kind of scrubber. Don't make me do anything. That's what is embedded in this. It isn't really the cost of alternatives. Although they do say, I grant you that at the very end of the policy comment on Resolution 4, they do say, you know, we have to consider that renewables are absolutely wildly expensive and are inefficient and are very difficult, and we don't want anything to do with them. So that's their last kind of throwaway at the very bottom of 3 pages of itty-bitty type in italics. So that's there, and it is worth saying that renewables have proven to be cost-effective in the long run. But I think the point they're making in the resolution itself is, don't make me do anything that would cause me to spend money that I don't need to otherwise spend just to reduce emissions.
But they're going to spend it. They're going to spend it in 10 years, and they're going to spend a lot.
Well,
I mean, you know, and I have to go back to the issue that was at this board, and you guys changed the policy years ago, the discussion about whatever it was, the lowest price, was that, you were there, I was not, I was at the very end of those discussions, and it was not, I know what you're saying, but theirs was being cheap, not cost, but being cheap. And I still think that's the predisposition, not only here, I shouldn't say here because I don't think it is. I think it is a predisposition in many places. And they need to quantify costs. I agree with what you're saying. They don't want to spend any more money, but they're going to spend more money if they don't start addressing it now. And that's why obsolete assets, because they become, there's 3 kinds of obsolescence. You know, one of them is technological. And they just become technologically obsolete because technology changed.
Yeah.
And that's cost.
I'm writing it down. Stuart?
Yeah, so I don't have a lot of experience being at these NREACA meetings, so this will be exciting when I'm there. But I really believe, you know, we as a cooperative have a resolution to look at triple bottom line model and consider it. That's supported by our membership in the latest survey that came out. And I agree with what you're saying. We do need to at least speak out and say that our membership has, you know, been surveyed, and they represent, you know, we are representing what our members are saying on a more holistic overview of it. And I think that's exactly opposite of what they're trying to vote through when they're saying, you know, the most cost-effective in those situations.
They're definitely in the sand. Here?
So I agree with Stuart that we need to be a loud voice there. We may not win this vote, and probably won't, but we need to talk about the triple bottom line. We need to talk about Hurricane Maria and Herman or all of those. I mean, things are changing. And, you know, it's not just those guys that need to change. It's all of us need to change. We all need to do our part.
Yeah.
and we just need to stay on it whenever we have the chance to speak about it.
Maybe the way to put that, just to respond to you, is that cost benefit is a broader analysis than the cost of the widget versus the amount of electrons you get out of it at the end. It's the cost to, it's the consequence of not acting.
That's why we have articulate board members like you.
So there is a motion on the floor. Let me see what you
Madam Chair, I just wanted to, in just from talking to Phil, just as a reminder that when four passes, it's only the first two paragraphs that really count. All of the policy background is just there for background. So getting into the cost issue, I don't disagree at all with the board, but I just want to remind everybody that it's just the two paragraphs that actually get voted on.
Gotcha. But it also says in those first two paragraphs they want to continue research efforts to determine the validity of climate change, which is, that's the head in the sand sentence.
Yeah.
Okay, so there is a motion on the floor.
Yeah.
Janet? There's a motion on the floor. Could you repeat the motion that's on the floor?
The motion was I move to vote. Just a second.
I should have written it down.
You don't touch this thing all the time, it dies, so hang on. I move that the Board of Directors accept the NREPA 2017 proposed resolution with the exception of resolution number 4 and that we vote no on number 4. That was the motion. I'll accept any friendly amendments that, you know, help clarify or strengthen that.
Can I?
Jim?
I had a question on 11. I need some clarification on 11. Keystone is still very much in the 4 and the same date they have no care for. We have an administration, we have an administration change, and there is a difference here. Okay? I need to ask what the other question.
I thought Keystone had been decided. That's what I thought too. What does Phil say?
I have another
action on this issue has already been taken, and voting no will delete the resolution. Voting no the resolution. So they're recommending a no, and that resolution disappears.
In fact, it's still very much there, correct?
No, I don't know. I thought Keystone had been decided. But this is a resolution as it's written, I think, supports Keystone, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm asking. I have that one little piece there.
11 says, we urge to support the development of the Keystone XL pipeline and urge congressional action to approve it. So this is a resolution that supports the Keystone pipeline, and they're voting no on it, so they're deleting that resolution because Phil thinks that they've already taken the action. So it's no, 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 but heads up, they're just deleting that. A yes vote would support the pipeline.
I'm struggling with a triple negative right now. But
yes.
Okay.
It's a negative.
This is not a double negative. It's a triple negative.
Yes vote delete it?
The recommendation from Phil and from the committee, I guess, is to vote no on it, which would be, because it says existing resolution, so they've already passed the resolution historically. They've passed a resolution in favor of the XL pipeline. The resolution committee says to vote no on it, and Phil agrees we should vote no on it because the issue's already dead. And I don't know, but I thought it was too.
If you understand it.
I think I understand it, and I think we want to vote no on it.
Okay, so there is a motion on the floor and a second, and the motion reads, Davina, do you have it?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Director Reiser moved and Director Reeves seconded the motion that the Board of Directors approve the NRCA resolution with the exception of resolution number 4. Voting no.
Okay. All those in favor?
I'm willing to accept a friendly amendment to also vote no on whatever that Keystone one is, if somebody wants to make that.
If the no is what we understand. I don't understand that. I'm lost.
Madam Chair, if I may, that's what I did not understand. If you vote no, are you deleting the resolution? Are you voting no as the resolution states? I wasn't clear on that. But I'm willing to accept a friendly motion that speaks to that.
Okay. I see some audience participation that has clearly read this and understands it.
I think with the last three resolutions are to remove those resolutions from the compendium that NRECA has. So voting in agreement with NRECA's recommendation gets those off the compendium of resolutions.
So would we like to?
We're good with what it says.
We're good with what it says?
Yeah, it's in Trump.
It says it's Trump.
Issued a permit for the pipeline in March.
Yeah, so it says the committee recommends against the adoption of the existing resolution. Note, the committee recommends that you vote no on this resolution. A no vote will delete the resolution. The Trump administration earlier this year approved the completion of the Keystone XL pipeline project. At this time, no further executive or federal action is needed related to this specific issue. So it's a done deal. Let's just get rid of it.
So the motion, as it was read, says that you will accept the NRECA recommendations with the exception of number 4.
Indeed.
Okay. So
that's correct. And Arden, could you change that in the record to accept the NRECA recommendation, not the resolution? I misstated that. It's to accept the NRECA recommendations with the exception of item number 4. That's how it should read. I apologize.
Okay, I have one more question. Yes, if we can.
You have one more question? Yeah, okay, then I'm going to call.
Whenever you're ready, on page, I'm going to go 57. It's page 13 of apparently the resolution is an area that's been added, and this may have been already been discussed. Any plan should consider marginal cost of replacement of fossil fuel. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this may be, and I said this is cheap. My comment is cheap state skates, but. Again, it's referenced by conversation on cost, because your perception of cost and mine are just different but not incorrect, either one of them. And is there something in that? If this is an addition. This piece was an added on. So do we need to address that?
I think we should, and I think that should be a comment. Would incorporate what Harry said and you said, that the lowest cost power today may not be the best solution for the long run. Yeah, this is new language. Again, it's in commentary to proposed resolution number 4. It's new commentary, and it says whenever you're going to replace fossil fuel generation, then you have to go for the lowest cost option while protecting the resiliency of the grid. So there's absolutely not a word in there that recognizes your responsibility to the environment.
Well, and they're even addressing marginal costs. They're addressing marginal costs now, and I don't understand the full concept of avoided costs, but they are not the same.
Okay. Yeah, I think.
And see, so they're not even addressing the cost.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take a vote on the motion that's on the floor. You want to read it one more time for me?
Director Reiser moved and Director Reeves seconded the motion that the Board of Directors approved the NRCA recommendations with the exception of resolution number 4.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? With that, the motion passes. Okay. All right. The next order of business that we have on the agenda under new business is to talk about the NRECA voting delegate and alternate. Is there a motion on that particular topic?
Madam Chair, may I speak to that?
Yes, thanks. Go ahead, Janet.
Yes, we have already voted on this, and Jim Henderson and Stuart Parks were appointed as the NRECA voting delegate and the alternate. Leading the meeting.
I'll speak to it because I have, this has been my one little minor contribution to Chugach for the 8 years I've been on the board, is I've worked really hard on these resolutions, and I've come and I've reported in writing and I've reported orally on the resolutions and I've testified on them 3 times at national meetings. And I would really appreciate being appointed by the board to do this one more time. You know, I've only got a couple more years on the board, and I think this is a way that I can do something for the organization.
I signed it for you.
Okay.
So I nominate myself.
Is there a motion?
I'll make the motion if you word it for me.
It's all worded right here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Here is a sign.
So I
approve this A and sign. How's that?
Okay. I can make a motion, but does that undo a motion we had previously? And
it would just take the place of the form.
And does the, what do we do for the alternate on this one?
There's no change.
As it is? Okay.
There's no change.
I move that the board of directors appoint Susan Reese as the NRAC voting delegate and Stuart Parks as the alternate. Join in the meeting. Janet.
Okay, Janet. Cece just made a motion to appoint Director Reese as the NRECA voting delegate and to leave Stuart as the alternate. And it was seconded by Harry. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
I have a question.
Oh, sure.
Wait, can I ask? Yes, I do have a question. So could you read that? What is the motion read now? Would you mind reading that back to me? The phone just dropped off, so I missed it. So can I hear the motion?
So this is Cece. Janet, I made the motion. The motion reads, I move that the board of directors appoint Susan Reeves as the NRECA voting delegate and Stuart Parks as the alternate.
Okay, thank you. I the phone just cut out, so I appreciate you reading that back to me. Thank you.
All right, so we're going to vote on that motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing none, Director Reeves will be the new appointed NRECA voting delegate. Okay, so with that, I think we are ready to go into executive session. So I have a motion.
I move that pursuant to Alaska Statute 1025-175C1, 2, and 3, the Board of Directors go into executive session to 1, discuss financial matters, the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect on the finances of the cooperative, 2, receive reports on legal matters that are attorney client privilege, the immediate knowledge of which could have an adverse effect on the legal position of the cooperative, and 3, to discuss personnel matters that may tend to prejudice the reputation or character of a person. However, the person may request a public discussion. Second?
All those in favor of going into executive session?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. We are in executive session, and we're going to take back to new business.
So here.
Give us a little.
So Connie sent out the attachments.
Got it.
You guys got those earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
They essentially it's what I told you last night. This is simply a restatement of the existing plan. The documents you have are the motion, the standard resolution that we need to send to NRECA, and then the attachment is what's called an adoption agreement. And there you see the same selections, plan selections that we've had for probably since 2003, something like that. So there are no changes in our plan selections. And unlike the restatement that you all did back in 2012, there are no plan changes. In that one that you did in 2012, there was another attachment that had a list of plan-wide changes and adjustments that they were, you know, new features that they were offering to control costs and make the benefit more useful for folks in the event of death, those kinds of things. So there aren't any adjustments to the overall plan. This is an IRS requirement. All pension plans do this. They have a restatement. All pension plans of this type do this.
Okay. Anyway. Any questions? Is there a motion?
Does somebody have a motion?
Somebody have a motion?
Why do you have a little bit of
It's page 477 of the iPad document.
I move that the Board of Directors approve the resolution authorizing the amendment and the restatement of the NRECA Retirement Security Plan, essentially the same as discussed in the executive session.
Second. Okay. Any discussion? Further discussion? All right. So let's take a vote. All those in favor of the motion that's on the floor, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
I hear no opposition, so the motion passes. Okay.
That's out of the table, right?
So the next item we did actually table, yep, until next month. So we can talk a little bit more about the benefits and the salary working congruently. So item C, it's the amendment to memorandum of agreement between ATA and Tugetch. Is there a motion on that item?
I move that the Board of Directors authorize the Chief Executive Officer to sign the amendment to the Memorandum of Agreement between Homer Electric Association, Inc. and Tugetch Electric Association, Inc. under the term and conditions essentially the same as discussed in executive session.
There's second. Okay. Any discussion on that item? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
All right, the motion passes. Item 10D is 2017 retail capital credit requirement.
Retail capital credit.
Yes, we have retail capital credit requirement. Do we have a motion for the
retail? Move that the Board of Directors approve the resolution authorizing a retail capital credit retirement of $1,773,702, which will retire approximately 34% of the capital credits for the year 1991. The retail capital credit retirement will be distributed no later than December 31st, 2017.
Second. All right, any further discussion on that motion? All right. All those in favor of approving that motion, say aye.
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 Any opposition?
Aye.
Hearing none, that motion is approved. 10E, the 2017 ATA Capital Credit Retirement Payment.
I move that the Board of Directors approve the resolution authorizing a capital credit retirement payment to ATA of $2 million. This capital credit retirement payment will be distributed to HEA no later than December 31, 2017.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion on this item, ATA capital credit retirement? Stuart?
This is set 10E. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's 10E. Mm-hmm. So would you like to hear the motion again?
Yes, please.
It's not a motion. That's the same thing. Here's the dollar amount.
I move that the Board of Directors approve the resolution authorizing a capital credit retirement payment to HEA of $2 million. This capital credit retirement payment will be distributed to HEA no later than December 31, 2017.
And there was a second?
Yep.
Any other discussion or clarification? Okay. All those in favor of the motion for the HEA retirement credit? Or retirement payment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition?
Aye.
Hearing none, the motion passes. We are going to move on to 10F, which is the 2017 Wholesale Capital Credit Retirement. Is there a motion?
I move that the Board of Directors approve the resolution authorizing Wholesale Capital Credit Retirement to NEA and SES $789,578 and $68,648, respectively, which will represent a retirement for the balance of 1995 and approximately 61% of 1996. This capital credit retirement will be distributed to SES no later than December 31, 2017. And is expected to be distributed to MEA no later than December 31, 2019.
Second.
Any discussion on that item? Hearing none, we will take a vote on the motion for the 2017 Wholesale Capital Credit Retirement.
You need
a
second.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
CC, you did a second, right? All those in favor of the motion? Say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. So, that's the end of our new business director comments. Would you guys like to do director comments?
I'm exhausted.
That's a good comment. Okay. Terry, how about you?
Can I say ditto for that?
Nothing else.
Okay, Jim. Good, Stuart.
I just do want to say that I think it was a good meeting. There's a lot of important items that we need to discuss. I think we did that.
Janet?
No comments. Thank you.
All right. And I hate to say it, but I probably do my first meeting chairing. I probably do hold the record for having the longest meeting. I don't know what the record is, but it's
the shortest meeting. Like 3 minutes.
Sorry, I did not want to be.
Yes.
All right.
I did have a quorum.
With that, I will take a motion for adjournment.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And we have adjourned at 9:15 p.m.